Assalamu alaikum and welcome to the Mindful Hearts. Hope you're doing well. We're going to get started, inshallah. Just give me a thumbs up when you can hear me. Wa alaikum assalam. Sister Aisha, if you let me know that everyone can hear me okay, and we'll get started. This is part two of conflict resolution Q&A. Last week, we had a really wonderful discussion, and many people, they were asking their questions about how to resolve conflict, because if you're in any relationship, whether that's with your spouse, with your kids, with your parents, in the community, you're going to face conflict. It is inevitable. Can you give me a thumbs up, please, if you can hear me okay? I'm awaiting. Okay, let's see. Sister Aisha, can you hear me? Okay. All right. Great. Bismillah. Wa salatu wa salam ala Rasulullah. A little bit of a delayed reaction, but wonderful. Let's get started. Last week, let's start over from the beginning. Assalamu alaikum and welcome to the Mindful Hearts. We're doing part two of Q&A on conflict resolution. Last week, we had a wonderful discussion on how to resolve conflict. You had your questions ready. There are some that I have that I'm going to finish today, inshallah. Some of the most common questions that are asked when dealing with conflict, because this is what I do for the past three decades. Alhamdulillah, I've had the privilege of helping couples, individuals resolve conflict, whether it is about their relationships, whether it's a personal thing. So inshallah, I have posed some of the most common questions that come up, and we're going to get started. So one of the questions, how can I be assertive without coming across as aggressive? How many of you have a hard time between maybe distinguishing between being aggressive and being assertive? One of the things I like to help people understand, those who may be very passive, right? They're passive, maybe they're people pleaser, they don't want to come across as aggressive. And usually people think it's either being aggressive or you stay quiet, okay? So these are two extremes. One is you are a doormat. You take whatever people say or do, and you don't speak up. This is not an Islamic behavior. We shouldn't just take abuse. We shouldn't just, not stand up for ourselves. We are encouraged to speak up, speak for the truth. And we see that with the example of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, with the Sahaba. They all were able to, they stood up for what they believed in. They didn't just be like passive and let people walk all over them. Now, the opposite extreme is aggression. Aggression is when someone is just rude. They're arrogant. They are only thinking about themselves. They step on others in order to get ahead. So that's aggressive, and that's being a doormat. There's something in the middle, which is being assertive. Being assertive means that you do speak up. You are firm but kind. And this is a very important aspect of like just being able to speak up. And I remember when I was doing my master's program, we had to take turns being the counselor and being the client so that we can, you know, have more empathy. And one of the things I worked on the most was being assertive, because I feel that many times I just wanted to overlook and I wanted to avoid conflict. But training myself in assertiveness was one of the best things that I've ever done. And I hope that all of you, those of you who just feel like, let me overlook, let me just, you know, keep quiet, whether it's in your relationships or at work, whatever it is, it is much better to be assertive. You will be more respected. You will be able to, you know, respect yourself, right? Because many times what happens is that when someone is quiet and they overlook and they, you know, just take whatever verbal abuse they're getting, then later on they're beating themselves up and it's eating them up inside. So what we need to recognize is that by speaking up, you're being a more genuine person. You are, you know, you don't want to come across as hypocritical, where you're smiling and saying everything's okay, but in reality, you're upset, you're frustrated, you are, you know, it's all building up. So we are going to talk about, so as far as how not to be aggressive. So I have to give you a little bit of background about aggression versus assertive. So, you know, when you are assertive, you're expressing your needs and boundaries clearly and respectfully, okay? You are getting your point across, you are calm, and your, you know, your body language, your tone of voice, nothing is confrontational. Being aggressive is when you hurt other people's feelings, when you use harsh words, maybe you attack. So this is how you can make sure being assertive, you're just saying, explaining what it is you are dissatisfied with and what it is that you want. So that, do you have any questions regarding that? How many of you have an issue with being assertive? How many of you feel like this is something that you really need help in? Because that, this is what I find, that majority of the clients I have, I mean, there's a small percentage that they're like maybe on the aggressive side, but majority are the type that they're non-confrontational, they don't want to speak up. So it is a very important question. So going right along, how can I stop myself from reacting impulsively in a heated argument? This is so critical because most people, when they get upset, let me make this a little bigger. When they get upset, then they just overreact and they say so many hurtful things. So it is so important, right, to manage your emotions. If you remember, level one, phase three was all about like emotional intelligence, right? And emotional intelligence is being able to recognize what triggers you, right? What triggers you? Like, is it disrespect? Is it being ignored? Is it being excluded? Is it being questioned? And when you know these things, then you prep yourself and you know not to be reactionary, okay? So as soon as you feel yourself getting heated, try to, you know, take a pause. Pause, take some deep breaths, and maybe even say, you know, I need a timeout. I feel like I'm getting angry and I need just some time to cool off because I don't want to say or do anything disrespectfully. Okay. So how many of you struggle with that as far as just keeping it together, being that not being able to control your anger? Okay. The other question is, what if I feel like I'm always the one apologizing, even when it's not my fault, right? So sometimes what ends up happening is that a person may just apologize, take the abuse because they're just like, you know what? I don't want to deal with any issues. I don't want things to escalate. So the intention may be good, but if you're always apologizing, then you may not be taken as seriously. It's crucial to recognize when an apology is warranted and when it's not. So if you have actually done something wrong, maybe you were disrespectful, maybe you raised your voice, maybe you were rude, maybe you like ignored someone, and then taking ownership and apologizing, that is probably like one of the highest forms of maturity, emotional maturity, recognizing that, you know, I acted out. I wasn't right. And doing that, even with your own kids. I mean, I remember being a little girl and my mom would apologize to me if she ever, let's say, overreacted. And I felt so respected, Right. So this is a wonderful way. You have to model the correct behavior. And when you say that, I was wrong. You know, I shouldn't have said that. I shouldn't have done that. Then they learn to imitate that. If you're always like just adamant about being right and I don't make mistakes and it's my way or the highway and all of that, if you have that mindset and you depict that, that's what your kids are going to do to you as they get older, right? Now, constantly apologizing, there's an imbalance in the relationship. So you may feel that there's an imbalance and you have to kind of evaluate this. Why is there an imbalance? Do you feel insecure in the relationship? Is there something that the person has on you? And you have to kind of evaluate that. Okay. Sister saying, I have a fixer mentality and I'm working on it. I realize this has caused some conflict with others because I can come across as giving unsolicited advice. Do you have any advice to combat this? Okay. Well, that's very honest of you. I think that's great that you realize you have that fix-it mentality and giving unsolicited advice. It's, you know, it is very challenging to hold back, right? I've struggled with this myself because I see, let's say, someone really suffering, maybe in their marriage, maybe with their parenting, and I feel like it's a little easy, like I got the answer, I can help you, right? And then you realize that no matter how valuable and how transformative this advice can be, if someone is not ready to hear it, then they're not going to be receptive. They're not going to be appreciative, right? So what you need to do is just train yourself to maybe like just look within, focus on yourself, because if you have that passion to fix things, okay, use it to fix yourself. Use that energy, use your knowledge, and use that ability to be intuitive and use it on yourself, because that's what I started doing. So 3 decades of just really, you know, in just looking within and seeing what is it that I need to improve on? What can I be better at? How can I be less sensitive? How can I be more compassionate? Whatever it is. And when you have that fix-it hat on, then fix yourself. Isn't that an awesome way to redirect? Because I know that it's hard when you have that instinct, when you have that motivation, you want to fix. You want to fix everybody. But guess what? People are not ready to be fixed. Even when people come and they make the appointment and they pay the price, right? They pay for the session. Sometimes they don't want to hear it. Okay. So focus on yourself. Use all that energy to direct it at yourself. And really don't give the advice unless someone asks. And that way you really feel valued. It's interesting that you say this, because I was just in a situation where I heard people discussing, they were just discussing some parenting advice, right? And, you know, the individuals giving the advice, I mean, they're just basing it on their own personal experience. I was there, I was kind of busy. And I really held back from giving that unsolicited advice. I held back. There was so much I could have said, so much, but I said, you know, I'm not going to say anything unless I'm asked. And at the end, the individual did ask and said, like, I really want your feedback and I really want your insight. And I feel when you wait until someone asks, then it is a sign of readiness, right? And that's very important. It's so important for a person to be ready. Okay. Let's see. I also grew up with tough love, and that is the way I usually, that's got to change. Okay. That has got to change. The tough love mentality is not well received, and you're going to lose a lot of your friendships. So maybe learn more about it, like a more compassionate way. I mean, the example of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, he was the best example in how he gave advice, how he was so loving. And sometimes, you know how they're the masjid police and they have this tendency to go and they're just like, the sunnah is this and the length of your beard and the length of your skirt. And they're like, you know, harassing everyone. And there was, you know, a designated masjid police in our masjid years ago. And I remember approaching them and everyone, it's just unbelievable. Every person that walked through the door, they had something to correct. And it wasn't done in a gentle, sweet way. It was just basically like, you know, one lady came, your hijab is see-through, your skirt's too short. It's like, wow, like you're just like slapping them with the truth. And so once I went up to her and I said, you know, Jazakallah khairan for being so passionate about the sunnah, Jazakallah khair for valuing the sunnah so much. However, you're overlooking the most important sunnah, and that is the way the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam gave dawah, right? I mean, if you overlook that sunnah, you have lost so much, because he always, I mean, the man was urinating in the masjid and he was like, don't rush him. Right? He used wisdom. He used compassion. He used empathy. And really check yourself. If you're giving advice, especially when it's Islamic advice, if you're giving advice and you're harsh, there may be, and I'm not saying this about you, but in most cases, there may be some level of arrogance. Okay? And you have to really check yourself. Are you saying it is the mentality like, I'm better than you, or I know better than you, I do my sunan and you don't, and I need to correct you? Because if there is any ounce of arrogance, then forget it. Not only are you not getting the reward, not only is this not going to penetrate the heart of the person, you may even get ithim. Because you're pushing the person. I see people doing that. I see that people doing that to their own kids. They push them out of the deen. They push them, you know, they push them away from the deen because it just comes across as so harsh. We have to make this, I mean, this deen is beautiful. It is sweet. We have to present it in such a loving and compassionate way. And if we don't, we have not done it justice, right? So it's very, very important to correct your methodology. When you advise others, how do you know not to overdo it? I feel like I can keep going on and on. Only later I realize I should have probably said my opinion and stop. Well, first, make sure they want your opinion. And then second, you know, just make it a rule not to repeat. There are some people that, you know, they will repeat the same thing over and over. I'm like, okay, I heard that. I honestly heard you the first four times, right? So just don't repeat. Just don't repeat, because that can take away. You know, doing dawah, I remember in one of my TV shows, I think I did a couple of episodes on this. There's so much psychology that goes in it. You have to know the human psyche. You have to know what inspires, what makes a person motivated. Coming and yelling at someone or criticizing someone, usually they shut down. So really, really try to use compassion and be gentle, right? All right. So let's see. So we said the apologizing. How do I deal with someone who refuses to empathize with my point of view? Okay. Yeah, there are some people that are just naturally empathetic. It's just so natural. They listen to you. They show the right, they show the right emotions. They say the right things. You feel their love and concern. Others, they may not have it. Okay. And I've had individuals, whether it's in counseling sessions or I even had a friend tell me, I don't have any empathy in my heart. She's a good person. She's a good woman. She's a practicing Muslima. But at an early age, maybe she wasn't given empathy. Maybe she had some harsh experiences and she didn't feel the protection of her family. And she had to kind of shut down those emotions in order to survive. And that's why a lot of people who they don't heal those inner wounds and they've had childhood trauma, what ends up happening is that they have, like, as a defense mechanism, they shut down their emotions. They're like, I can't feel, because if I feel, I'm going to get hurt. And if someone gets hurt over and over and over again, then they're going to really shut down. So, or they're going to be devastated. So as a defense mechanism, they become very stoic. It's like, I'm not going to show you that I'm hurt. I'm not going to show you that I'm angry. But all of that, what it does is that, a person loses empathy. They're not able to be empathetic because they shut down. They train themselves to shut their emotions down. So when you understand why someone is not empathetic, then you're not like, oh, you're so selfish. You're such an arrogant, selfish narcissist. This is what people love. They love to listen to little, you know, reels and shorts, and then now everyone thinks they know everything there is to know about narcissism, about childhood trauma. It's hilarious because it's so easy now for people to just diagnose everybody, right? So we have to be careful with that, and then just realize that beneath that harsh exterior, there might be a very wounded person. Okay, they may be very, very wounded, and they just don't know how to be in touch with their, you know, with their emotions. So empathy can't be forced, okay? But you can try to get them to, you know, see your perspective. You can share in a non-confrontational way, right? But if they refuse and you feel like, you know, you're only the one who is empathetic, you may have to set some boundaries, right? And, you know, sometimes you have to too. And I told this friend of mine, I go, look, I understand you said, you know, you're not an empathetic person, but you need to learn some empathetic behavior, right? What is empathetic behavior? That is, let's say, you know, I'm sitting here and I'm telling you about something difficult I'm going through. Maybe it's an illness. Maybe it's some trial. Okay. The empathetic behavior is to listen, right? And make a statement saying, like, that must be really difficult. Like, sit in it. That's how I describe it. I'm like, sit in it. Because I would say something and she would sit there and respond with, oh, I have like 5 parties to plan. It's like, what? What are you saying right now? Right? So learning empathetic behavior, because sometimes people are like, oh, I don't feel it, so this is the way I am and just deal with it. A person can learn to have empathetic behavior, but again, it can't be forced. It is something that a person needs to develop, right? I really struggle with empathizing with people who burn me. Even if I understand their trauma and what made them that way, I feel like it doesn't justify the pain they cause. How to shift mindset? True. I mean, you can't justify it. It's not about justifying, like, oh, okay, I know. Yeah, poor them. They acted out this way. They had no other choice. No, it's not about that. It's about understanding. Right? It's about understanding where does this stem from? Because if we, I always use this analogy because many people come in and they are so angry at their parents, right? They're so angry. And they're like, one client just told me, she was so mad. She's like, that woman, referring to her mom, is like, that woman didn't teach me anything. And she was heartbroken because she felt that she was neglected. She was not given love. She was not she was not taught anything. So person comes in with all that anger, like, how do you, what do you do with that, right? So it's really, the analogy is, let's say you're starving and there are two individuals. One person has this buffet of food and you ask them, can I have some food? I'm starving. And they say, no, I'm not going to give it to you. You're going to be frustrated. You're going to be angry. Like, you have all this food. Just give me a little bit, right? Then another person doesn't have anything and you ask them for food. It's like, I don't have anything. You're not going to be mad. You're going to understand the person doesn't have it to give it. And that is the case for a lot of, let's say, parents. That can be the case for a lot of people where it's not that they have it and they're withholding it and they're saying, no, I don't want to share with you. It's more about they don't have it to give it, right? So that can really help you understand. So the mindset is not, oh, yes, this behavior, it justifies the horrible things they did. No, it's about understanding where each person is coming from. Okay. I feel like feeling sorry for them comes across as me thinking I'm better and they are worse off than me. Isn't that arrogance? Feeling sorry for someone is not arrogance. If you feel bad that, oh my God, like, I can't believe they've gone through this. How is that arrogance? Arrogance is thinking I'm better than you because I know how to do this and you don't, in anything, right? People can have arrogance regarding their intelligence. Some people can be arrogant because of how they look, right? So it's about thinking I'm better than you, right? And judging the other person. But if you're feeling bad for them and you feel like, oh my God, that person, this is why they're so harsh. That's not arrogance at all. Okay. All right. So we got that. Now, all right. The next question, what if the other party is unwilling to negotiate or compromise? How many of you deal with this? My way or the highway? Maybe you're one of those. Who knows, right? So if you have difficulty compromising, or if you're dealing with someone who has difficulty compromising, right, it's really important to stay calm and then be focused on the goal, right? And I always tell people, look, you can't expect another person to abandon their beliefs, abandon what they believe in, and just jump on board with you. Right? No one's going to do that. This idea of, oh yeah, I'm right, you're wrong, and here's how you're going to change. That rarely works, and it may work for a while, but then what happens is that there are repercussions. There are repercussions, and what ends up happening is that you're going to feel there are repercussions, so there's going to be a lot of resentment, okay? So it's very important that you indicate that let's meet in the middle, okay? I'm not going to give up my view. You're not going to give up your view. How can we meet in the middle? And I see how effective this is when working, like when I'm doing marriage counseling, and I see that one person is saying it's got to be my way, the other one's saying my way. And I just tell them, like, look, how do you think you can meet in the middle? How can you make this a win-win? Most of the time, people don't care whether they are win-win or not. Most of the time, it's I win, you lose, and they're totally okay with that, right? As soon as you think win-win, that's when everything changes. Then you're like, okay, what can I present that will make this person get on board with me? And I always use this example that if you have a business partner and your business partner says, all right, you're going to do all the work, I'm going to get all the money. Like, you're going to be like, what? I'm going to agree to that. But if he says, you know, we're both going to work 50-50 and we're going to share the profit 50-50, then that will be acceptable. Okay. Let's see. How can I mediate between two people when I'm emotionally involved in the situation? How many of you just honestly have had to, let's say, be a mediator between maybe your parents? A lot of times, I was just recently talking to some young individuals that they came to my office and they were telling me how throughout their lives, they had to be the messenger for their parents. They weren't talking to each other. It's like, go tell him this, go tell her that. And that can be so draining. It's so draining, right? So if someone, if you find that you have to mediate, it's hard. It's hard to remain impartial when you're emotionally involved. That's why they say it's so much better to go to a professional. They're not emotionally invested. So like I can be objective. I can see both sides and give the advice without being pulled, right? Maybe if you can advise them to go to an unbiased mediator, like say, and sometimes you have to draw the line, right? I've had adult children who are in their, like, let's say 20s or 30s, and they're just so sick of the drama between their parents. And they want to help their parents. Like they want to help them get back together. And I said, really, you're not equipped. Mediating. Marriage counseling is one of the hardest things on this planet. And I know so many counselors that they refuse to do marriage counseling because how hard it is. And most people can't resolve their own conflict, much less other people's conflict, right? So they stay far away from it, even those who are educated and trained in psychology. So for you to come on board and you don't have the skills, you may not have the knowledge, and then you're emotionally entangled, it's a disaster. It is a disaster. And I've even seen people who may even do the training. I had one client and I was trying to restore their relationship and they were making progress. Then the sister who was a counselor said, I'm going to help. She sat there for 4 hours and did some kind of exercise. It just pushed the woman over the edge. She went and filed for divorce because she was like, I can't do this, because it was very obvious that she was not being fair and she was biased. So in order to navigate this, you have to set some firm boundaries. You can say, I really would love to help you. Sometimes I've had to do that with friends that, the problems are so overwhelming that I've had to say, I can be your friend. I can be like a sister, but I can't be your therapist. And now I really understand why it is encouraged not to do counseling with friends and family. Before, I used to think, how can you not? You care for them, you love them, you want to help them. But it really impacts the dynamics of the relationship, right? And because a client acts very differently when they come on board, they're ready to receive the advice. They are there for a reason, but a friend may very well, or a family member, you're going to be resistant, right? So it's if you can set some boundaries and say, I love you, I can listen to you, I can share your emotions with you, but I don't think I don't have the skills to do this. And I don't want to do it in the wrong way. So if you can get that point across, it will be very beneficial. Don't try to go in and then you make a bigger mess out of it, right? It's like the analogies I can think of is someone who has no cooking experience and they're trying to make the most difficult, let's say, pastry that requires expertise. You're gonna mess it up. Or someone like, if you're a builder and this is a very complicated structure that you have to build and you don't have any experience. Like the most experienced people struggle with it. So how are you gonna do it? You're just gonna make a mess out of things, right? So really know your limits, really understand what you can and cannot do. You can show support. You can show Like, I'm here for you. I love you. I will listen to you. But as far as giving you advice, as far as being a mediator, I'm not trained. I'm not trained for this. And there's nothing wrong with that. Okay. What if I feel pressured to agree to terms that don't feel firm? Fair. You know, do you all have any issues with that? Do you feel that sometimes you feel that you're trying to negotiate and the person is just not being fair? Have you experienced that in the past? Right. So you have to, it is important to stand your ground in negotiations, right? Maybe you can be polite, but you firmly express your concerns. And then you can propose an alternative, right? And you can't just succumb, because sometimes, finding a compromise, you have to make sure that it's mutually beneficial solution, right? And if you have a person who, let's say they're bossy, let's say they like to push people around, but you draw the line, right? Then they are going to be very careful with you the next time. They're not going to do that. So make sure that you speak up. Let's say it is in a work situation, right? I remember I had a friend who was a teacher, and every time she had an off period, they would assign her to another classroom, and she would just take it. And so they kept dumping. And finally, I encourage her to speak up and say, look, if you want me to perform at my best for those classes, I need to have a break to refuel. And then because she spoke up, because she drew some boundaries, guess what? They stopped dumping, or they dumped a lot less, right? All right. How can I forgive someone who hasn't apologized or acknowledged their wrongdoing? This is a tough one, and I'm going to make a statement that is so profound that if you embody this and if you understand it, then it will change so many of your relationships, and it will change the way you view forgiveness, because forgiveness is a personal journey and doesn't always require an apology. So Aisha, if you could write that down, that's a very critical message that we need to let people know. There are so many people that I have forgiven. I never got an apology. And it's just, you have to look at it as, what is this causing me? And I'm not telling you to, it's not forced forgiveness. It's not about, oh, just take abuse. No, this, it has nothing to do with that. It's about attaining peace and recognizing that by holding a grudge, by being angry, what ends up happening is that there's going to be a lot of turmoil. Okay. It's about letting go of the resentment for your own peace of mind. And you focus on healing, right? You focus on healing and consider the act of forgiveness as releasing yourself from the burden of anger. Isn't that beautiful? You're releasing yourself. And when you look at it in this way, then it definitely will have a profound impact. You can forgive someone without ever getting an apology. Okay. What if I want to reconcile, but I'm afraid of being hurt again? Okay. So it's very natural. And this is one of the things a lot of the couples that I work with, they were like, oh, what if he goes back? And what if he does this again? What if she does that again? And that is a very natural and a very valid concern, right? It is a valid concern. And what I recommend is that when, let's say someone has wronged you and they want to get back together, I'll use the example of cheating because sadly it is so prevalent in our communities. I know that many people don't realize it, but practicing Muslims find themselves in these circumstances. So let's say the person has cheated on you, your spouse, and then you want to get back together again. And there's that fear, right? Well, as far as like the cheating is concerned, I always say there's a criteria. Are they remorseful? If someone is like, hey, sorry about Vegas, that's not remorseful. I've had that. I am not making this up. I've heard someone talk like that. And it's like, okay, this person, there's not an ounce of remorse. They're going to do it again. Second, they have to cut, let's say, ties with the person. Third, they have to get help. This is not something usually that a person can just kind of overcome on their own. Fourth, you have to change for the better. Okay. You have to improve. So when you look at a person being afraid of getting hurt, then there has to be some kind of an agreement that, hey, I am committed to making a change. And how am I going to make the change? By doing these steps, right? I'm getting extra help. I'm getting accountability, whatever it is. So instead of just being afraid, make them like there needs to be a commitment to change. All right. Let's see. Okay. My mother has Alzheimer's. Oh, I'm sorry. And my brothers use the money that comes for her care to pay the bills for the house. How do I make them realize it's wrong? Oh, that's a tough one. The money that comes in for her care. Who is sending the money? Where is that money coming from? Is it like coming from other family members? Is it from the government support? Is it some kind of insurance? You know, that is a very difficult situation. And it sounds of the government. Okay. I mean, it sounds like they're probably struggling financially and they're a little bit stuck. So maybe instead of just saying that this is wrong, you can kind of address their circumstances, right? Maybe address the circumstances and think, okay, how, like, what is the issue and what can be done? And don't come in with a accusatory or like judgmental tone. Come in recognizing the seriousness of the situation and a person. They must be desperate in order to do such a thing. Don't assume like, oh, you're so bad and evil and this is haram and you're taking her money. Like just say, gosh, you know, I'm sure you would never do this if like the situation must be really bad. You must be really struggling financially that the money that's coming in to support mom, you're spending on this. Like what is it? What can we do? Let's brainstorm a little, right? Present it in that way so that it doesn't come across as like, oh my God, you're such a bad person for doing this, right? Okay. How can I forgive myself for past mistakes that have caused conflict? Okay. You know, sometimes the hardest person to forgive is yourself, right? That self-forgiveness. It involves, you have to acknowledge your mistakes. You have to say, you know, I realize this is where I messed up. You learn from it, right? And then you take steps to mend it if it is possible, right? So let's say you've wronged your parents. You've wronged your parents and you want to fix it. You realize you've made certain mistakes. Maybe you're now so much better. You apologize to them. And then maybe you can do things to make it up for them. If they've already passed away, maybe you can do sadaqah on their behalf, right? And then it's about understanding that everyone makes mistakes. And it's really about, like, sometimes mistakes are the best opportunities for growth. Okay, growth, learning, and when you turn a conflict or a problem into an opportunity, then you can, you know, you can really thrive, inshallah. Okay. Let's see. How can I apply conflict resolution skills at work when dealing with difficult colleagues? Okay. That can be very tricky. I've had many people complain about the, you know, office politics. There is the, you know, the competitiveness. There is like people trying to throw you under the bus, right? So you have to really maintain professionalism. You have to try to use the active listening and then being assertive without being confrontational. Okay. And it's better if you address the person privately and not in front of others, or don't like tattletale, right? A lot of people in the office, instead of going to a person, maybe I remember I had a situation in the last office building I was in, and there's an individual right next door. They would turn on the music, right? And sometimes it was like, okay, he's finished with work. He's trying to relax. So I try to overlook it, and I, instead of going and maybe telling the management, you know, you need to tell them to lower that, I just went up to them like, you know, that's nice. It seems like you're done for the week, and, you know, you're ready for some R&R, but could you kindly, I'm like, I still have sessions, and I'm going to be here, like, let's say till 8:00. Could you please turn down the volume? Of course. Yeah, sure. And they do it. But if you go and you tattletale on them, then that can become a source of tension, okay? So that you have to address carefully. What if I find myself avoiding conflict altogether because they make me anxious? So many people have, you know, that avoidance behavior. And this is why, you know, you find that in a lot of marriages, a person just like they just shut down. The problem occurs, they either run away, right? Literally, sometimes they get up and they go to their parents' home, they get up, they go to a hotel. They just can't handle it. And that's why it's so important to teach this conflict resolution, because it, if you don't learn it, then you are going to freeze when you're in a conflict. You're not going to know how to resolve it. So you're going to either hide or you're going to run away, right? Or you shut down. So it is very, very critical to learn how, you know, learning the steps, right? And then know that if you avoid a conflict, it doesn't go away. It's like if you ignore a cavity, what's going to happen? The cavity is going to turn into a root canal. If you ignore the root canal, what's going to happen? They're going to have to pull the tooth out, right? So you cannot think the problem is not going away on its own, okay? And then a lot of times, you have to realize that not all conflicts are negative, right? You can actually have a positive outcome, right? So start with small steps to build your confidence in handling conflict. If you go through, you know, on my mentorship program, the Mindful Hearts Academy, we just did how many lessons? 6 or 7 lessons on conflict resolution. And it gives you step by step your mindset, your attitude, how to listen, how to respond, how, you know, if you go through an exercise like that, a program like that, that will change everything for you. You will know what to do, what to say, and you will feel very skilled. Okay. All right. How can I ensure that I continue to grow in my conflict resolution, in my conflict resolution skills? Okay. So that's an important question to ask. How do I continue to grow? Right. So continued growth, what does it come from? You have to keep practicing. You have to keep reflecting, and you have to have someone that is honest with you. Okay. You have to regularly assess your interactions, right? Get that feedback and then set new goals. So it really, like, engaging in continuous learning. Like my passion is continuous learning. I want to continue to learn, to work on myself and be a better person. So if you have that, because some people are like, I'm done. This is the way I am. And they're like only like 30. You can't think that way. You got to continuously, you have to continuously learn and work on yourself. So if you can let me know, what is it that you're walking away with from this Q&A? Is there something that you learned, something that you got reminded of, something that you are going to start doing, inshallah? Thank you, Sister Aisha. It's about attaining peace and recognizing by holding a grudge, being angry ends up happening. Is there going to be a lot of trouble? It's about letting go of the resentment. Okay. I think we missed the biggest part of that. That was about you don't always have to, what was it? It was, I don't think it was this. It was something about the forgiveness. Okay. It was this. Forgiveness is a personal journey and doesn't always require an apology. Right? It's about letting go of the resentment for your own peace of mind. Okay. And focus on healing. Focus on healing. Okay. Thank you so much. Anything else? Any other questions? Inshallah. Next week, we are going to have a break. Okay. Because it's the end of this at the conflict resolution. I hope that you benefited. If you did not watch all the videos, take the time to watch. It is, you know, I put a lot of time and effort into each lesson, and it's all done with, you know, with the steps of making everything very easy. So if you have conflict in your life, just, you know, make sure that you commit to that learning and applying and changing yourself. So if you know someone that maybe one of your friends, a family member that may need this, a sister of yours, your mother, tell them about the Mindful Hearts Academy, and maybe they can benefit by being a part of our community and learning to sell, you know, to work on themselves, this self-improvement. I had one more question. Can you please scroll up? Let me see. Let's see where your question was. I really struggle with empathizing. I feel like feeling sorry for them. Can you rewrite the question, please? I don't see it. I thought I got all your questions. If you could, please rewrite your question, because I feel like I addressed all your questions. Let me see. Yeah, I think my problem before your account comment. You can't just copy it and retype it. I'm not finding it. It starts with my problem. Okay. All right. I'm sorry. I'm not seeing it. If you'd like, you're welcome to write it again. I'll be happy to answer it, inshallah. So I hope that you all, may Allah give us the ability, the wisdom, the compassion to understand the situations we're in, to give us the ability to resolve our conflict fairly. Ya Allah, help us to have the right words, have the right tone, have the right way of resolving issues, because really sometimes something so trivial can actually go out of hand, and people are starting to talk about divorce when they're just talking about, let's say, the chores. So Ya Allah, help us to have a good understanding, to be fair, to have God consciousness, and to have empathy in our heart. Ya Allah, help us to be able to penetrate the hearts of the people around us, show lots of love and understanding. And ya Allah, help us to have the ability to forgive. Help us to release ourselves and be able to forgive ourselves and to really make a difference in our own spiritual healing, emotional healing, and be able to do the same for others. Okay. Yes. Thank you for getting that. I appreciate it. So next week, we're not going to have a lesson, and then we'll see you the following week, inshallah. Take care. Assalamu alaikum.